All right. Morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And my first guest this morning has been on the show a few times. He's a good guy. He's the author of several books, including Big Hair and Plastic Grass and Stars and Stripes Baseball and America in the Bicentennial Summer of 76. His name is Dan Epstein, and I want to welcome him to the show. Dan, welcome back.
Hey, thanks, Nick.
How you been, man?
I've been great. I moved back to Chicago last summer.
I was so happy that you came back here.
I was, too.
Yeah.
I still am, actually.
Yeah.
It was time. After 22 years in Southern California, Chicago was calling me home.
Yeah, so. Well, welcome back, man.
Thanks, man.
It's great to have you back. And, boy, when did you actually move back?
Almost literally a year ago, July 27th of last year.
Okay.
Which, if you look back at the Cubs' schedule last year, that was the day they got hot.
Right.
So
I was going to say, then I'm going to give you full credit for what's been going on here.
Yeah,
now, did you move away from Chicago between June and the All-Star break? Just because that's how. You know,
oh, this year?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just want to say you probably moved away then in June and before the All-Star.
I don't know. I don't really know what was going on in June that I did to cause that.
Yeah.
But I'm glad to see they've kind of righted the ship.
They have. Now, last night's game was great. Hendricks, what the hell?
Yeah.
I mean, beautiful stuff. But the night before, man?
Oh, my God. That was, you know, and it was so funny because they went up. Or they went down 6-0 early on to the Mariners, and I remember saying to my wife, "You know, we don't have to watch this. Like this is," and yet she said, "No, you know, let's go ahead and watch it." I'm really glad we did because that was an absolutely insane last couple of innings.
One of the craziest things I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And I've said that about 6 times this season.
Right.
Like after the Cub game ended, I said that was one of the craziest things I've ever seen. Madden's crazy.
Yeah,
I mean he's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean with some of the stuff that he does and. You know, oh, God.
Right. Wood.
Travis Wood in center field. Come on, man. How is that not the coolest thing you've ever seen?
And like, you know, coming back a couple of innings later to pitch again.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
Lester laced on a bunt on a 2-2 pitch?
Yeah.
Come on.
Hayward, you look back at the clip of that, Hayward didn't even get that good a jump coming down from third.
I know.
Like, you look at it again and go, ooh, he almost didn't. Do that right.
It was fantastic. So anyway, it's been a crazy season.
Yeah.
Well, listen, first of all, you invited me to co-host the screening with you.
Absolutely.
And I really appreciate it, man.
You know, I would have no other. I think you and I were about the same age.
Yep.
We the Bad News Bears, when it came out in 1976, I'm going to assume had a similar impact
Huge.
On your life that it did on
I was 11. When it came out, and it had a major impact on my life. It remains one of my favorite movies of all time. Now, you actually wrote a piece about it being the greatest baseball movie ever made.
Yeah, I did something for Rolling Stone back in April, 9 Reasons Why Bad News Bears is the greatest baseball movie ever made.
I want to get to that in a second, but I want to let everybody know, if you want to come and see it, Dan is going to be there tonight, and you're going to have your copy of your book, Stars and Strikes, right?
Yeah, the bookseller from Lincoln Square is going to be selling copies of Stars and Strikes, and I'll be there. I'll sign them to you, to your relatives, whoever you want to buy a copy
and for. It's a great book, by the way. It is. You were on to promote it a couple times, and it's a tremendous book. But and then we're going to show the movie. It all starts at 7:00. It's this Monday night, August 7th, at the beautiful Music Box Theater. And I can't believe that movie's 40 years old. It makes me feel so old.
Well, we are.
So. I know, man. I was like, man, that movie's 40 years old. Good God. $12 to get in, $9 if you're a Music Box member. We would love you to come in to see the 40th anniversary of Bad News Bears. So what is it? Tell me some of the reasons, what this piece that you wrote for Rolling Stone.
Well, I mean, let me kick this off by saying that I find baseball movies, by and large, to be terrible. They're really formulaic. They're really saccharine. The characters are very one-dimensional. And none of that is the case with the Bad News Bears. It's not formulaic. It's not saccharine. The kids are real kids.
Yeah.
That was such a revelation seeing it on the screen in 1976. It's like these kids up on the screen, they look like me and my friends. They talk like me and my friends. They're wise asses, and they're distrustful of authority like my friends and I were.
Yeah.
And it's still so refreshing to see that, when you watch the film again.
Yeah. I agree with you 100% on all of that. And the thing about that is, when it was remade by Richard Linklater
right.
in 2005, and it's not terrible. It's I don't think it's terrible.
Yeah, it just really, it just has none of the vibe of the first one.
No, it doesn't. And it shouldn't have been remade. It's
right.
one of those movies that shouldn't have been remade. But it wasn't nearly as much of a train wreck as I imagined it would be.
Yeah.
And I think that has everything to do with the fact that Richard Linklater is great.
Right. He's not going to let it be a complete
Exactly. And he loves baseball.
Mess.
Did you see Everybody Wants Some?
I haven't seen that yet.
You got to really see it.
Yeah.
It's a baseball movie.
Yeah.
It truly, at its core, it's a baseball movie. You got to see it, man. When that one came out, it got a PG-13. The 2005 version got a PG-13. And it's insanely less, it's so much more tame.
Right.
Than the version that came out in 76, which was rated PG. But it was a different time.
It was a much different time. And,
yeah.
I was thinking about it today. It's kind of like, Blazing Saddles, which came out 2 years earlier, where it's right. like, a lot of the humor is predicated on people saying
awful things.
Awful things.
Yes.
And in a way that would not be acceptable now.
Right.
But it was not done in a mean-spirited or people would be like, oh well, it's movies are so PC now, they couldn't do that now. I don't know that that's really the issue, there are certainly scenes and snippets of dialogue that are pretty shocking.
Oh,
in
yeah.
retrospect.
Oh, yeah. Especially because they're coming out of kids' mouths.
Right.
And there are things in Bad News Bears that today you go, whoa.
Right.
But nobody even batted an eyelash in 76.
Right.
It was like, that's how kids talk. That's how people behave. Yes, the coach of a baseball team is going to give like a 10-year-old a beer.
Right.
That's like that's a normal thing. It's such a great movie on so many levels, and we'll get into that. We're going to talk more about it. But I want to make sure that everybody knows tickets are going pretty good for this. So you might want to get in there and go to the Music Box website. But we have a link on our Facebook page right now where you can get tickets. It's this Monday night, August 7th. It's August 8th, right.
Yeah,
the 8th. Yes. Yes, August 8th. I got a lot of stuff going on this weekend, Dan.
It's cool. That's why I'm here.
But thanks, man. August 8th. It's August 8th. It's this Monday night, August 8th. Dan's going to sign books. We'll talk about the movie. We'll show it afterwards and all that cool stuff. So hang on, Dan. We got a break for the news. When we come back, Dan Epstein will come back. We'll talk about his books, and we'll talk about Bad News Bears. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We'll see you Monday night, the 8th. At the Music Box Theater. News is next. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trip Tower. Playing some stuff from the 70s. Dan Epstein is here, author of several books, including Stars and Strikes and Big Hair and Plastic Grass. He and I will be co-hosting a 40th anniversary screening of Bad News Bears, Monday, August 8th at the Music Box Theater on Southport. We got a link for tickets and all that stuff on our Facebook page. We just played a little Frampton. And I've often said this to people who are, because you and I are very close in age.
Right.
People who didn't grow up around the same time that we did don't realize the impact that Frampton Comes Alive had.
Oh, yeah. That record, I think at the time it was the greatest selling double album ever released, and you could not get away from him and that talk box.
Yep.
Throughout the entire year of 1976.
It's absolutely true. And it's also one of those deals. There are a few records that, like, if the authorities broke into your house and you didn't have it in your record collection, you'd go right to jail.
Right.
There'd
yeah.
be like that, and Rumors was
right.
another one. If you didn't have those albums, that's it. You got to go right to jail. Let's talk about your book, the latest book. What was it about the year of 76 that you, why did you choose to focus on that year specifically?
Well, a couple of things. One, for me, I was 10 in 1976, and that was the year I fell in love with baseball. And so there's, I think when you write a book and spend so much time researching it and all that, I mean, it's kind of like your own personal time capsule.
Yeah.
So I really wanted to go back to that year and kind of explain to my 10-year-old self what I witnessed. You know, I saw this stuff. I didn't understand it. It's also it's a hugely important year from a baseball economics perspective. This is the year that free agency begins on a full scale. It's the year that Bill Veeck comes back to Chicago and takes over the White Sox again and is Bill Veeck and injects all sorts of new life into Comiskey Park. It's the year of Mark the Bird Fidrich, who comes out of nowhere.
That's a big deal for you.
Huge, because I was growing up in Ann Arbor, Michigan, so the Tigers were my first team. And you know, so this guy, this you know, this is happening in our backyard. This guy who's, you know, tall, gangly, looks like a grown-up version of one of the Bad News Bears, in fact. And he's talking to the baseball and being goofy. And I mean, you talk about Peter Frampton. I mean, in 1976, by the end of the summer, Mark Fidrich was as big as Peter Frampton plus the Fonz. Mm-hmm. It was like that was the kind of pop cultural expanse that Mark the Bird Fidrich had.
Yeah. So lots of stuff in 76.
Yeah. And so many interesting characters, so many great teams, great players. Dick Allen, that's his last full season. I know you're a fan.
Yep.
This is, of course, the year that I'm just looking at the cover right now. That's the summer that Bill Veeck puts the White Sox in shorts for three games.
That's right.
With their new uniforms with the collars. And looking back, I realized, you know, it was a very important year, but it was a year that often gets kind of short shrift in the baseball history sense, because the World Series was the Reds sweeping the Yankees in four games.
Yeah.
Not very interesting, not very memorable, unless you're a Reds fan. And I think people tend to define seasons by what happens in the World Series.
That's probably true.
And so I thought, like, this is a season that's just ripe with all sorts of incredible stuff. I mean, DJs in Boston hiring a Salem witch to take the curse off the Red Sox bats. I mean, that's just like one little thing that happens that summer. And I just thought, like, no one has delved into this. And I felt like not only should it be done, but I would be the man for the job.
I agree. And a book turned out great. I love the way you structured the book. And tell everybody how you named the chapters of the book.
So every chapter of the book is named after a hit song from the summer of 1976. And the reason for that is that in an ideal world, I would be able to give everybody a playlist of 1976 top 40 radio to listen to while they read the book.
Yeah.
I can't do that, but if I call a chapter The Boys Are Back in Town or Don't Go Breaking My Heart or Show Me the Way, you'll hear those songs in your mind whether you want to or not as you read the chapter.
Now, let me ask you this. People who talk to you about the book, and you've been doing a lot of, you know, you've done a lot of signings, you've done a lot of readings, you've been promoting the book and interviews and all that kind of stuff. How do people who aren't around our age, because, you know, like, I'm right in the wheelhouse,
right?
You know, so what about people who are a little bit older than us? That's one thing. But what about younger people? How are they reacting to the book?
They can't believe how crazy it was. Like, so many younger people have been like, man, I wish I was alive in the 70s. I wish I had seen this firsthand. It's really, you know, and that's the same thing that made me write Big Hair and Plastic Grass, where I just felt like this is such a rich period in baseball history, but it's so weird that a lot of, like, more mainstream historians, I mean, you look at Ken Burns' baseball documentary. I mean, the 70s blow by in about 3 seconds because it's so weird. It doesn't work with everything else that, you know, Oscar Gamble's afro has no place in the sepia-toned nostalgia of Ken Burns.
Right. So. There's a lot of weird – and you point that out. There's so many strange things happen in in baseball in the 70s. And I mean, a lot of strange stuff was going on in general in pop culture in the 70s. And it was just reflected through baseball.
Right. And that's, I think, like what the 60s were as far as to music, the 70s kind of were to baseball, where it's like it had been this very kind of I don't know that corporate's the right word, but very conservative world.
Yeah.
And where players, you know, didn't make waves, weren't really encouraged to speak their mind or show a whole lot of flair on the field. Mm-hmm. And in the 70s, that just explodes.
Yes.
And you get flair for days or for years.
Yeah, from the way people addressed to the hair to just the way people acted.
Right.
You were talking about how like Fidrich would go out and talk to the ball. There were a lot of lunatics on the mound in the 70s.
Al Raboski, the mad Hungarian, who's stomping around on the mound between every pitch and just like glaring at the batter like he was going to kill him. I mean, you wouldn't have seen. You know, I think Bob Gibson was probably the most homicidal-looking pitcher in the 60s, but he didn't come close to what Al Raboski was doing.
No, Raboski was nuts, and it was so entertaining any time he was pitching. You know, like as a kid, I'd be like, oh, my God. My dad and I would sit in front of the TV and just not believe the way this guy was acting.
Yeah, and I think that there's a clip that's out there on YouTube somewhere of Raboski pitching against the Cubs where I think it's Madlock. Was it at Wrigley or at Bush? I can't remember, but Bill Madlock starts getting out of the batter's box and stomping around like Raboski is between pitches, and then like it erupts into this full-scale brawl.
See, you know, one of the things that I loved, one of my favorite teams ever, and this is not a 70s team, but they to me were like a throwback to the 70s. I loved the 93 Phillies.
Yeah.
They were one of my favorite teams of all time because they were just a bunch of slobs.
Right.
You know what I mean? They were drunks. Kruk walking around with a cigarette hanging out of his mouth, and it was like a throwback to that era that I'm talking about,
yeah,
where
absolutely.
It's like they didn't give a damn, and everybody picked him to come in last,
right?
And then you know, and then of course Mitch Williams gives up the home run to Joe Carter, and I was like, damn it! And of course, ex-Cub, of course, but I just loved watching those guys. One of my favorite stories ever was they had a doubleheader, and the night before there was a night game, and the night before. It went extras. It went to like 14 innings. So about like eight of the guys after the game ended at like 1:30 in the morning.
Right.
So afterwards, the guys are like, man, I'm not going home. So it's like Incavelia, Dykstra, Morandini was one of my favorite players of all time. And a bunch of other guys on the team decide that they're not going home. So they end up getting a bunch of beer and they order a bunch of pizzas and they get loaded. At the ballpark in the locker room. They get loaded. They pass out. Okay, people start coming in the morning. They get up, just get out there in the uniform that they slept in. Okay, beer cans all over the place. They get up, they go out, and they play. Kruk was too hungover to play the first game. He played the second game, and he went 3-for-4. So it was like, that's the 93 Phillies. And I was rooting for those guys because it's representative of that kind of craziness that was going on in the 70s.
Yeah, that is a very 70s story for the early 90s. So that's beautiful.
A little crazy. And how about the Rick Monday flag incident?
Right, and that happens in late April of 1976, where Monday is playing center field for the Cubs, and at Dodger Stadium sees this guy and his kid jump onto the field out of the bleachers and try to burn an American flag like between innings, and Monday just kind of sprang into action and ran and grabbed the flag away from them before they could.
Yeah.
I think they'd already doused it in lighter fluid.
Right.
Gave the flag to the Dodgers for safekeeping. And I mean, here's the other thing I love about 1976, and this works into the Monday thing, which is that was the year of the bicentennial, this 200th birthday celebration of America.
Yeah.
Which was a really cool time to be a kid, but in retrospect, like a lot of that frivolity and festivity was pretty forced and kind of cheesy. And I think when Monday rescues that flag at Dodger Stadium, it was like a very genuine expression of love for the country and for the flag, and people could really relate to that a lot more than the like bicentennial logo on every bottle pop.
And the bicentennial minute.
And the bicentennial minute,
all over TV.
I love that.
I know. Those are great. You had those on your website.
Yeah.
You posted a bunch of those on your website. Those are fantastic.
Yeah.
If you weren't around in 1976 to see the bicentennial minutes, they were great. Rick Monday was my favorite Cub when I was a kid. And I vividly remember that incident. And he was just, you know, he was one of my favorites when I was growing up. But that's like, you know, like in the 70s, I mean, that's the era I grew up in, you know. And you know, a lot of those classic guys, you know, like Kingman and all those guys from the 70s, DeJesus and Jose Cardinal. You want to talk about hair?
Oh, yeah.
Manny Trio.
One of the greatest efforts of all time.
Manny Trio, all those guys. Hernandez. The 70s is, you know, when I was watching the Cubs. And that was back in the day. I grew up, and you know this, I grew up six blocks away from Wrigley on Addison.
Wow.
So I would walk to the games, and this was when you could go and just go in and sit.
Right.
Anywhere.
Right.
And I tell people that, you know, it makes me sound like I'm 155 years old, but I remember when you could go to Wrigley, go for maybe like $3, sit in the grandstand, and then afterwards you could fold the chairs back up, like, and then you get tickets.
Right, for the next day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, I moved to Chicago at the tail end of 1979.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember for the first couple of years, I mean, I went to school just and probably a mile south of Wrigley. And I remember being able to go after school and catch the last couple of innings.
That's right.
And just wave you in.
Just walk in. It's such a different time,
yeah,
man. It's so different now. And now, what do you pay to get a Wrigley, to get into Wrigley?
Oh, man. I mean, like anywhere. A friend of mine recently came to town and hadn't seen a game there in 12 years. So he's like, "Yeah, I got tickets. They're $86 a piece." I was just like, "Ooh,
it's unbelievable! Isn't that crazy, man? It's nuts." Okay, well, the book is "Stars and Stripes: Baseball and America in the Bicentennial Summer of '76," and is it in paperback now?
It is. It came out this year in paperback.
Okay, so. Just came out in paperback, and you will have books at the screening.
Yes,
and
provided by the bookseller in Lincoln Square.
Bookseller in Lincoln Square. They'll provide the books, and you'll sign them. And then we're going to show the 40th anniversary screening of The Bad News Bears. It's Monday, August 8th at the Music Box Theater. Now, if you've not seen this movie, first of all, you have to.
Right. It's time.
It's time. Second of all, if you haven't seen it in a really, really long time, it's time. Other big thing is if you've never seen it on the big screen, this is the best place where you can possibly see it.
Or if you haven't seen it on a big screen since it came out.
Since it came out. Yeah, that's another. It's another thing. This is a 35mm print that they're going to be showing at the Music Box. And it's going to be an experience like the 70s, because there aren't any more theaters like the Music Box, but there were a lot of them in the 70s.
Yeah, and that's how we saw it back then.
And then Dan and I will do a little Q&A afterwards and talk about the movie. So it's going to be a lot of fun. We got a little bit more here to talk about with Dan Epstein, and you can check out our Facebook page for all the information, links to Dan's books, and links to get tickets to our co-hosting the special's 40th anniversary of Bad News Bears this Monday the 8th at the Music Box Theater. Everybody come on out. It all starts at 7 o'clock. All right, more coming up right after this. Thin Lizzy, man. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Lots of stuff coming up in the next couple of weeks here, including Flashback Weekend is this weekend, the 5th through the 7th, at Crown Plaza Hotel. And to talk about that is going to be one of my co-hosts for Flashback Weekend, Steve Procopi. He's going to join me after 3. And then after 4, Barry Levinson is going to join us. He's the founder and the curator of the Mustard Museum. You ever been to the Mustard Museum, Dan?
I have not, but I think I need to.
It's in Middleton, Wisconsin, and this Saturday is National Mustard Day, and they have a huge celebration outside the museum, and we're going to talk with Barry about that. Barry is always kind enough, every year I have him on, and he's always kind enough to send me a bottle of my favorite mustard of all time.
Which is?
Which is Burtman's Stadium Mustard.
Oh, right on.
It's the Cleveland mustard that you can only get when you go to Cleveland.
Yeah, it's famous.
It's amazing. The first time I went on a baseball trip in 1992. Me and five idiots rented a van, and we drove to the East Coast, stopping at baseball stadiums along the way, and we went to Cooperstown, and we did the whole number. And so our first stop was Cleveland, and this was when it was Municipal Stadium.
Right.
You know, so it was this vast, empty.
The mistake, by the way.
Exactly. It's like, they shared the stadium with the Browns, so it's just this really. And we got, and we were talking about how cheap it is to go. If I remember, this was 1992. I think we got in for like $4 or
wow.
something. And like, no, parking was four. It was five to get in.
Right.
And so we, you know, we go to the game, and first thing you know, we did, as we often did, was to immediately go up to the counter and get a beer and get a dog. And I get, you know, I'm not thinking about anything. I take a sip of my beer. I walk over to the condiments. You know, I put little onions on there, and then I, you know, the mustard is there, and I pump it out. And I'm like, all right. I take a bite of it, and I went, what is this? And I went up to the counter, and I go, oh my God, I've never tasted mustard like this before. And the guy behind the counter just goes, you're not from Cleveland, are you? And I'm like, no. And ever since then, I've loved it. And so, you know, whenever I have Barry on, he always sends me a couple of bottles of Bartman's. Oh my
no.
God. Oh no. Freudian.
Seriously.
So can you remember the first time you saw Bad News Bears?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I went with, it was part of a friend's birthday party. I mean, this is like my entire life turns on this night, because up to that point, I knew about baseball, didn't really care that much. My friends played Little League or, you know, whatever the equivalent was in fourth grade. And, you know, but I went along with my friend Tim's, I guess it would have been his 10th birthday. And so his family packed us all into their van, which was like a Dodger Chevy conversion van with, like, you know, shag carpeting, whole
right.
deal.
Right.
We go, and the film was just a revelation to me, and it made me, I mean, at the time, like, I just had never seen kids on the screen who looked like me and my friends, so that was huge. But also, just, like, it made baseball look so interesting and so fun to be a part of. So then we go back to my friend's house for cake and party favors. Well, the party favors are, we each get five unopened Topps wax packs of baseball cards. These are my first baseball cards I've ever had.
Yeah.
And so I'm opening them, and it's like, oh, Hank Aaron, I've heard of him, you know,
yeah.
but all these other guys I've never heard of. But this is the 76 Topps set, so it's super colorful, all this great hair, mustaches,
right.
polyester uniforms. And so that kind of took me in, and I went home, and my dad was a baseball fan, so like, what are all these numbers on the back? And he sort of explained what,
yeah.
all, and that from that point on, I just became obsessed with baseball.
So it was really like a life-changing thing.
That was really
That's so cool.
It was Friday night in Ann Arbor, Michigan. I think it was the Fox Village Theater.
Yeah.
And yeah, no, like you can really trace me sitting here talking to you back to that night.
That's amazing. I saw it at the Commodore Theater, which no longer exists, on Irving near California.
Wow.
And I went with my friend, as I did to many of those movies at that time, with my friend Dan Long. And you know, we were huge baseball fans and everything, and just the two of us went, you know. And my dad took us. And so we went and saw it, and just, it was, you know, it was like, I've, you know, these kids are so cool. Who did not want to be Kelly?
Oh, yeah, Kelly League.
I mean, come on.
Total, totally, like, the baddest 12-year-old who ever existed.
Yeah, it was so many cool things about that. Like, that character, Kelly League, was so cool. And of course, I think everybody had a crush on Tatum O'Neal.
Sure.
Who didn't have a crush on
Amanda
Tatum
O'Neal? Amanda Wurlitzer, the greatest right-hander ever.
Absolutely right. Now, it's interesting. Buttermaker is one of those characters. You know, I mean, he wasn't originally Walter Matthau wasn't originally supposed to play the part.
Right.
It was, I think, Steve McQueen was the first guy that Michael Ritchie had in mind.
Right.
And then who else have you heard any other? I think there was,
you know, I have somebody else who I'm completely spacing
yeah,
on at the moment.
But Matthau gets the role. Matthau didn't want to play the role. But I mean, that's become like one of his signature roles.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, as Buttermaker, the down at the heels, washed up former minor leaguer who's now cleaning pools, and I mean, and it's such a great 70s character. I mean, you know, as a fan of 70s cinema, like, how important the anti-hero is to that period of film, and he is such. You know, it's like he is the most sympathetic adult in the film, and yet the first time you see him, he's emptying out a little bit of his can of beer so he can pour bourbon into
right.
it. And this is like first thing in the morning.
Right.
So, you know, you already know that this guy's kind of seedy and
right.
maybe not
right.
to be trusted.
And then Vic Morrow, of course, a legendary role. And you're right. I mean, like, it's funny because he's the – Matthau is the most sympathetic adult in the movie, and Vic Morrow is just one of the meanest guys ever.
Right, but we all played either for or against Little League teams who had a guy like Vic Morrow as the coach.
And one of the other things that the movie does beautifully, besides capture the time and place perfectly,
yes,
but it also really does say something about how, parents live vicariously through their kids, and whatever failures they've had as adults, they take out on their kids for not doing well on a baseball field.
Right, they project onto them.
And that is timeless.
Yeah.
That still happens today. I mean, how many times have you seen, news footage of, some guy rushing out and start screaming at an umpire, I'm going to punch him in the face.
Right,
because of
or seen it in person.
Yeah.
It really nails that. And not to spoil the ending for anybody who hasn't seen it, but let's just say it unlike most baseball films, it does not put forth the idea that winning is
right
the most important thing.
It also has that in common with another movie that came out that year, Rocky.
Right.
It has that same thing in common, and Rocky went on to win Best Picture that year as well. So it was kind of the year of the underdog.
Right.
But I personally think the Bad News Bears are a bigger underdog than Rocky Balboa.
Look at that lineup. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. Well, listen, man, I'm very excited to be doing this with you on Monday, co-hosting this screening. It's the 40th anniversary, if you want to feel really old. 40th anniversary of the Bad News Bears. It's Monday, August 8th at the Music Box Theater. Dan will be there signing his book Stars and Strikes and hanging out. And I'll be there, and then afterwards we'll do. Dan will introduce the movie, and then we'll have a little talk afterwards and a Q&A. It all starts at 7 o'clock. It's $12 to get in. It's a beautiful Music Box Theater. You can get your tickets online, and we have a link on our Facebook page for it. And we want everybody to come out. Let's pack the place.
This will be a great night. There's no Cubs or White Sox games that night.
That's right. So there's no Cubs or White Sox games. No excuse. You should be there. So it's Stars and Strikes is the book, Baseball in America, the Bicentennial Summer of 76. Also pick up Big Hair and Plastic Grass, another great book that you wrote.
Thank you.
Yes, please. Yeah. And yes, pick them up. And we've got all the information and links on our Facebook page. Again, it's this Monday night, Bad News Bears 40th anniversary screening. Me and Dan will be there to help introduce it and talk about it afterwards. This Monday night, Music Box Theater. Dan, always a pleasure, man.
Oh, Nick, thanks so much for having me.
And I know that you, at the beginning of the season, you picked the Cubs to win the World Series.
I did. And I still think they're going to do it.
I hope you're right.
And it'll be great to be back in Chicago for it.
Yeah. You said they're going to play the Royals, which I think is a possibility.
I don't think that's going to happen.
All right.
Well, here's the thing. I didn't pick the Royals all the last couple of years, so I figured, okay, I got to go.
Well, they won last year,
right.
so it's, it's a pretty safe bet. All right. Okay, man, I'll see you Monday.
Right on.
All right, take care. The news is up next.